Welcome to the Homesteaders of America podcast, where we encourage simple living, hard work, natural health care, real food, and building an agrarian society. If you're pioneering your way through modern noise and conveniences, and you're an advocate for living a more sustainable and quiet life, this podcast is for you. Welcome to this week's podcast. I'm your host, Amy Fuel, and I'm the founder of the Homesteaders of America organization and annual events. If you're not familiar with us, we are a resource for homesteading education and online support, and we even host a couple of in-person events each year, with our biggest annual event happening right outside the nation's capital here in Virginia every October. Check us out online at homesteadersofamerica.com, follow us on all of our social media platforms, and subscribe to our newsletter so that you can be the first to know about all things HOA. That's short for Homesteaders of America. Don't forget that we have an online membership that gives you access to thousands, yes, literally thousands of hours worth of information and videos. It also gets you discount codes, an HOA decal sticker when you sign up, and access to event tickets before anyone else. All right, let's dive into this week's episode. Hey, Ruth Ann, welcome to the podcast. Thanks, guys, for joining us on this week's Homesteaders of America podcast. I have the pleasure of having Ruth Ann Zimmerman. And so for those of you who don't know, Ruth Ann is actually a 2023 HOA speaker. So if you're coming to the conference, definitely check her out there. But we're also working on a women's event that we are hoping to get Ruth Ann to as well. So all those details won't come out until much later in the year. But in the meantime, Ruth Ann, why don't you introduce yourself and who you are for those people who may not know you?
Well, my name is Ruth Ann Zimmerman, and a lot of you might know me from Instagram. Instagram kind of caught up with me a couple years ago. But before that, before you all knew me on Instagram, I was here doing exactly the same thing I am now. And my husband and I will be married 23 years in May, and we have lived on this property since 2000. So Wow. We have 7 children, and our acreage is 21 acres, and we are in far northeast Iowa, which is why I'm still wearing a sweatshirt, even though it's almost April. It is still cold. I cannot even boil sap today because the sap in my barrels is frozen solid.
Wow, that sounds like a lot of fun.
Yeah.
Well, I'm in Virginia and I'm wearing a sweatshirt too, but you know, here you would probably think it's warm today because it's like right around 60. But for me, I'm still cold because, you know, our highs are like way into the 90s in the summertime. So it's pretty funny to see those differences. All right. So today I thought I would bring Ruth Ann on because I would love to talk about parenting littles on a homestead, not just littles, but the big ones too, because we get questions all the time about how do you keep your kids active? What do your kids do? What do your chores look like? And how do you homestead and homemake with lots of kids underfoot? So we're going to walk through that a bit today and just have a candid conversation, mom to mom. And hopefully it kind of gives you guys, even not just moms, maybe some dads too who listen, some good advice and inspiration and encouragement. So Ruth Ann, why don't you get us started by telling us a little bit about your kids and what their age ranges are? That'll help because a lot of people, you know, they have different things. You know, some people only have one child, some have 10 different age ranges. So tell us a little bit about that.
So we have 7. Our oldest is 21. And she got married in 2020, and her husband live locally. And our youngest he has a birthday tomorrow. So he will be turning seven tomorrow. So they range from 21 to 7. So a little bit about our family. We thought 4 kids was good. And then we got inspired. So we had 4 biological children. We got inspired to do foster care. We ended up with 2 adoptions and then a surprise baby. So that's how the people that said 4 kids is a good number ended up with 7. And I really think going from like 4 seemed manageable to me. My husband's from a family of 13. I'm from a family of 9. And in the Mennonite world, that's not unusual at all. Mm-hmm. But of course, you know, we were going to do things differently than our parents did. So 4 seemed very manageable, and I had things pretty much under control with 4, but going from 4 to 7 without even really consciously planning to end up that way is probably where a lot of the skills that I just kind of parenting skills that I kind of played around with. Mm-hmm. That's probably when they really took root. And I was like, okay, this is a system that works. This is what we're sticking with. And a lot of my mindset changed too, because it had to.
Yeah. Yeah. One of the things I appreciate about following you on Instagram. So when I'm talking about you to certain friends, I always say she's the tightest woman who is teaching women how to do this. Right. So like I grew up in my family life was totally different than your family life. So you grew up in a Mennonite household where you had lots of systems and firm things set in place. My household I grew up in was kind of like, survival of the fittest. You kind of do this and do that, and there's no routine or anything. And so for me, that's been my biggest challenge in being a parent, because I've had to learn, like, how do you set these things in place? So why don't you walk us through like a typical, let's start with homemaking. So I know a lot of women are going to ask about homemaking. So with kids, especially, it's hard to keep up with the homestead. It's hard to keep up with the home in the house, especially in the summertime when you're outside doing chores and in the garden and preserving. So what are some tips or systems you have in place that really kind of help you keep your sanity in your home in order during that time?
So summer is really hard because I want to be in the garden 100% of the time. Like I want to wake up and go to the garden, and I want to be in the garden until it's time to go to bed. So I always try to tell people that the homestead and homemaking is not separate from your husband and your kids. It's all one. So you can't, you know, wait to make a meal until they leave you alone or they don't need you. It doesn't work that way. It has to be combined. And most of the year I do really, really well with that. But when it comes to summer, I want to be alone. I want to be alone yeah. in my garden. And so I can relate to people when I think of myself in the summertime. But what I do for survival and to make it all work is just a certain amount of my days has to be structured. So, you know, milking the cow, cows are just really, really great for keeping me on the straight and narrow when it comes to structuring my days. So only in the summertime, because our kids are home from school, then we're not near as structured, but we still need some structure because there's some things that must be done or our life just falls apart. Like yeah. we still need to eat 3 meals a day and the dishes still have to be done, or otherwise we end up with no dishes, you know? So I try to break it down as simply as I can and say, okay, these are things that have to happen regardless of how busy I want to be in the garden. So it's meals and dishes. And as soon as we have those checked off the list, then I can do whatever I want.
Yeah. That's a good place to start. And you don't have a dishwasher either. So I know a lot of people will be like, well, does she have a dishwasher? But that probably doesn't even work for a large family, does it?
Well, I did have a dishwasher. So kind of backstory, I didn't grow up with a dishwasher, so I didn't know it was something I needed. Mm-hmm. And the house that we live in had a dishwasher that didn't work. So we used it for storage. And so then one of my best friends, she said to my husband, your wife needs a dishwasher. She doesn't know it, but she really needs a dishwasher. So I got a dishwasher. And you know, these modern appliances, mm-hmm. they're not made for homestead life. They're right? not. So if it says they're going to last 5 years, you can cut that down to half because we're using yeah. it 3 times a day, sometimes more, because we have a large family and we have a lot of dirty dishes. We don't use a lot of paper plates. You know, we use a lot of dirty dishes. Anyway, long story short, our dishwasher lasted about 2 years. And my husband was like, you know, this was just recently. So last fall, I think it quit working.
Yeah.
And it's electronic. It's something electronic is wrong. So it's not like my husband just get in there and fix it like he would with, you know, some older appliances. And he was like, well, we're going to go buy a new dishwasher this weekend. And I'm like, wait, hang on. Let's wait just a minute. How about we take the winter and we make sure that all of the kids brush up on their dishwashing skills? We're uh-huh. stuck in the house most of the winter anyway. So I don't know how that's going to work in summer. I don't know if I'm going to keep up with, okay, you know, this it's lunchtime is your time to wash dishes, or if I'm going to break down and say, okay, let's spend another $600 on a dishwasher. Right. But that's where we're at right now, is everybody's brushing up on their dishwashing skills.
Well, that's good. That's life skills for sure. So at our old house, we had a dishwasher that we never hooked up, because for years it was just the two of us and our oldest son. And then, you know, we've added a couple more babies since then. And so just a couple of months ago, I guess it was probably in January, I got a dishwasher, and I was so like adamantly against dishwashers. It was the same concept. Like all of my friends were saying, you have to have a dishwasher. And now I'm like, oh, wow, this is amazing. At least for all our small family. But I could see how, like, even for us in the summertime, and when we have a milk cow going through lots of jars and things like that, it could get a pretty good workout. So yeah,
I think my favorite part about having a dishwasher is the dishes are off the sink. Like they're hidden.
Yeah.
You can't see them. Yeah. And you can, you know, stack them in there. And there's no dishes drying in the dish rack. Mm-hmm. So I told my friend Kate, venison for dinner, I said, I can't get you to all my dishes. And she's like, you have 7 children. Assign one of them to dry the dishes and put them away. And I'm like, oh my goodness, yes. So anyway, so now that's another assigned chore, is drying the dishes and putting them away so that I don't have to look at dishes all day long.
Yeah, that's my favorite thing too. That's what I told my husband when we got it. I said that, so technically I will never have dishes on the sink unless it's something, you know, massive that has to be hand washed. So I enjoy that. I like the look of things being put together. But so that actually brings us to the next thing. You're talking about delegating chores. How do you do that? So we have some families, I hear this time and time again, you know, they have multiple children and they'll say, well, I try to delegate chores, but they just won't get them done, or they won't get them done properly. And you've spoken about this a lot, especially on Instagram or in your subscribers on Instagram. Why don't you touch a little bit on kind of how you set those chores up for your family and how it's a non-negotiable in different ways?
Okay, so you're right. It's a very popular subject. And I actually wrote an ebook about it just so that I have a place to collect all of our tips, and people can, you know, purchase that and have it all combined. Mm-hmm. Because I feel like on Instagram, we speak in 15, 30 second increments, and it's hard to put it all together. One of the first things, so starting from the top down, or actually starting from the bottom up, you have to know how much groundwork you've laid and what your child is capable of. Because if you haven't delegated chores, your 15-year-old isn't going to be able to do what my 15-year-old is doing, because you haven't laid the groundwork. But don't let that discourage you. It is never too late. So you just go back and you start like they were a 4 or 5 year old, and you start expecting the same thing. So let's say, for instance, I have a 10-year-old that I've never delegated any chores to, and I've always just pleasantly asked, would you help me with this or would you help me with that? And we all know that when a child gets to a certain age, it usually happens between 8 and 12 somewhere. They're like, no, I don't want to. Mm-hmm. And if you haven't laid any groundwork, you know, and, you know, even if you've laid groundwork, you're going to meet with those attitudes, you know, at one time or another. But let's say this 10-year-old has not, you've never, you know, required chores from him on a daily basis. You're going to pretend he's 4, and you're going to say, okay, so let's say it was clearing the table. Your job is from here on out, you know, unforeseeable future, your job is going to be to clear the table after every meal, or, you know, something like that. We're going to use that just as a, you know, laying some groundwork. And he is not going to like that one bit. And you're just going to stay consistent. And usually, you know, what punishment or a consequence, let's say what consequence mm-hmm. works for each child. For some of them, it'll be as simple as, well, you can sit here on this stool until you decide to clear the table, but you cannot go do anything else until the table's clear. Simple, matter of fact, keep it simple. No lectures, just simple. And for other children, you'll say, well, you either clear the table or you don't get screen time the rest of the day, you know, things like that. And then you just every day have the same requirements and the same consequences for that chore. And then once that one's mastered, you of course make a big deal about it. You're like, you know what? You haven't complained about clearing the table all week. I'm going to do it for you tonight and you get to have free time. You know, just those little things that help make them feel respected for doing their part of, you know, chores. And then as that's mastered, you build on that and you use the same concept for every chore. You can't do anything else until this chore is properly done. And then you just keep adding responsibility until you have a 15-year-old that can take care of the whole homestead for a couple of days if needed.
Yeah.
So, and of course, like say, if you're starting with a 15-year-old, you use the same layered kind of concept and your 15-year-old is going to rise to the occasion much faster just because of pure brain development and being able mm-hmm. to put together consequences and knowing what the end result is. So your 15-year-old's going to cruise on up through there where, say a 5-year-old or a 6-year-old, you're going to take a couple years and you're going to, you're going right. to keep working until they're 16 and build on what you've got.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So what are some age appropriate chores? So I know that, like you said your age ranges, obviously your oldest child's not home anymore, but you have various different things going on your homestead. So from milking a cow and even doing like butchering chores to just the homemaking things, what are some examples of age appropriate chores starting from the bottom and going up that you've set standards for your kids?
So generally around 6 years old, between 5 and 6 years old is where I expect that they're going to be able to do some chores independently. Now, these are little 5 to 15 minute chores because, their attention span doesn't allow them to work that long without an adult redirecting. Before that, in the preschool years, you just bring them alongside of you and they're just observing everything and they think they're helping, even though they're really, they're slowing you down at that point. But so Harrison is almost 7. And so in the morning right now, his chore is he, of course, has to get himself dressed and get his backpack ready for school. And then he gets the table set for breakfast. And just a little side note here, the table does not need to be set for breakfast. We can all get our own plate and get some food and sit down. But Harrison needs a chore. He has 4 siblings here at home every morning. So we set the table purely because he needs a chore. So we set the table and we have a formal breakfast. And then, so he usually has that all done by the time I come in from the barn from milking. And then after we all eat, his chore is to clear the table. So he has to take everybody's, plates over, put all the food away that we got out. And then he has to pack his lunch and then he's done. And he will be 7 tomorrow. And then I have an 8-year-old. So my 8-year-old gets up and his chore is, of course, he has to get dressed and get his backpack and everything ready. And this is all happening while me and one of the older children, a couple of the older children have gotten up and gone to the barn. So this is all happening usually without a whole lot of supervision, even though one of the older children is in charge of the house. So Kendrick just turned 8. His chore is to feed our dogs and let them out of their kennels. And then after breakfast, he wipes the dishes and puts them away. And that's also, he has to pack his own lunch and get himself ready to go out the door. And then Maxwell is 10 and he goes along in the barn and he takes care of the chickens and gathers the eggs. And he brings the cows in if they're not in. Basically, the 10-year-old's kind of like my right hand when it comes to the cows, shut the gates, let them in, feed this one and the chicken chores. And then the 2 older children, 13 and 15, they actually switch off by week. And 1 week they are in the house and they will make breakfast. And then after breakfast, they will wash dishes. And the other week they go along in the barn and they feed all the pigs and help with milking and, taking care of the milk and things like that.
So that's awesome. Have you found that having more children is easier than having the 4 as they've gotten older because you have more help? Or would you say that it doesn't make a difference?
The hardest stage was when I had my 2 babies because they're 13 months apart. So I had a newborn mm-hmm. and a toddler. So I had 3 preschoolers. and two teenage daughters. The girls were 15 and 16 when Harrison and Kendrick were born. So that was definitely the hardest stage emotionally and physically, even though the girls did a great job, you know, with handling the excess, you know, all the housework that I couldn't do because I had two babies. They were still teenagers and they had a life of their own. And then, you know, so that was definitely very trying, but it was a very, very short season. Mm-hmm. Like it was so short. And now we're kind of on the other side of that. And yeah, I find it's definitely been easier for a couple reasons. I'm much more confident as a mother. And I've developed a very simple, and I don't know if it's because I now have four boys, but less is better. Less words.
Yeah.
And real short consequences and always the same consequence. I'm sorry. Mm-hmm. This is the way it's going to be. There is no ifs, ands, or buts about it. But the other reason I think it has become easier is because it's like a little water coming down over the rocks. And with each child that I've expected the same thing, it kind of leaks down into the next one. And by the time we get to the bottom, I don't have to do a lot of training because it's kind of leaking down from the top. Yeah. So I do think that has made it easier as well.
That makes a lot of sense. I can remember when we had a single child for 9 years before we had more children. And my neighbor said to me once, that's the reason I asked this. She said, oh, I feel so sorry for you that you don't have any more children. It's so much easier when you have more children. One, rude, but two, you know, it was interesting because she also, I think she had six kids and she was telling me how it's easier. It was easier for her when she had more kids and to keep each other entertained and to help with chores.
I think she has a point, but I think what we forget to focus on and give credit to that is with each child, we die a little more to self and we become a little more eternal minded. Mm-hmm. And the older our children get, the more we realize that they're eternal souls, you know, so our focus gradually shifts with just maturity in our own minds. And the just the gravity of these are eternal souls. So I think we become less selfish. The more we focus on the eternalness of raising children, the less selfish we become and the more content we are with just being mothers.
Yes, I agree. That's a really good way to look at it. And, you know, I have found that as an older mother, I'm not old by any means. That's not what I'm saying. But, you know, from the experience of having our first child in my 20s and then having the rest of our kids and whatever the Lord wants to bless us with in the future in my 30s, you know, mid 30s and older, me as a person, I'm just more confident in who God's created me to be too. And so it's not, you're right. You nailed it. It's not, you're not being as selfish as before, and everything doesn't have to be as perfect as before. And we really embrace that family unit instead of just, it has to be this way and the only way. So
we kind of start letting go. We start letting go of the ideal or our expectations. And we kind of realize that our family dynamic is a whole, it's a whole force in itself. And you're kind of along for the ride more than anything else, because the older your children get, the more family life takes on a life of its own. And you can just, and my mom explains it this way, and I think about this and I'll give you a very good mental picture of motherhood. And you'll think of me just the way I think of my mom every time you think of this. So she would say that her life is like a wheel. Family life is like a wheel. And there's all these little spokes, which are the children. And then there's the outside world, which is the rim of the wheel, and she's just the hub. So everybody runs in and out on their spokes connecting with mom. And as long as she stays where she needs to be, the wheel keeps turning pleasantly without these bumps and jerks. Because as long as she stays in her place where she needs to be, where people can access her, things go smoothly. So I think about that sometimes when I feel stuck, when I feel like there's no way out and everybody's going to need me forever. I think of that and I'm like, you know what? I'm just the hub of the wheel. And as long as I stay where I'm needed, then the wheel will keep turning smoothly.
Mm-hmm. That's a really good visual. I'm for sure going to remember that. Yeah. And it's encouraging because, you know, especially as moms, when we're busy and there are just days that it's like, oh my goodness, what is happening? And it's encouraging for our older kids too. So like we're experiencing that now. Our oldest is almost 14 and he's starting to take on a life of his own. He's going to youth group. He has his friends. Some of his friends are getting licenses, and having older kids now, I'm realizing, you know, you think the hardest part is when they're newborns and toddlers, but you're right. Now that they have their own life and you realize, are all of these things I've taught them sticking with them and bringing them back home and being, you know, reminded of home and what they've learned here. That's a perfect visual. I think that's perfect for moms nowadays, especially.
The other thing with teenagers versus babies. So when you have little ones, and you know this because you've got, you know, a baby underfoot, they discipline you. Like,
right.
They tell you when you're going to sleep and they tell you when you will get to eat a peaceful meal. Like, they discipline you. But then when you have teenagers, you have to discipline yourself to be available for them, because they have respect for you, and they're not going to, most teenagers anyway, they're not going to knock on your door like a toddler would and say, I can't sleep. So you have to discipline yourself to be available for them. And it takes, and here's why we guide to self slowly along the course of parenthood, because it takes self-discipline to stay available for your teenagers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Hey, thanks for listening. We're going to take a quick break to introduce you to one of our sponsors that has been with HOA for a few years, and that's Premier One Supplies. At Premier One, they've been providing electric fencing and electric netting, sheep and goat supplies, clippers and shears, ear tags, poultry products, and expert advice for over 40 years. Whether it's electric netting for your chickens or cattle or horses or poultry, or clippers and shears, and even poultry supplies such as fencing, feeders, waterers, egg handling supplies, hatchery items, they have it all. They are a one-stop shop for all things homesteading, just like many of our sponsors. Check out Premier One Supplies at premieronesupplies.com, and don't forget to check them out at the HOA event this year. I remember seeing a painting. It was a painting or a graphic one time on social media. And it was a child who had all of these different little squares, you know, the painting was, but the squares were taken from the parent and created into this child, and like our time, our sacrifice being available for them. It was really interesting to see that visual. I'll have to try to find it for you guys and put it in the show notes so you can see it. But it kind of hit me, you know, sometimes it's an inconvenience. You know, a lot of parents are like, oh, but I could be in the garden. I could be getting the preserving done quicker, or the milking done quicker, or I might have time to sow. But really the best work, especially the best kingdom work, is our kids and bringing them alongside of us. At last year's women's conference, I didn't get to catch all of your talk that weekend. I did go back and listen to it, but when I was sitting there in that greenhouse listening to you talk, one of the things that you said was, it used to be, you know, where grandchildren and children would be up under their mother or grandmother's elbow at the counter all the time, learning everything. The option wasn't for them to just go play and not bother you, especially at young ages. They were right there with you, and that's how they learned, in the trenches with you. And so that just rang true for us, especially homesteading, because when we raised our oldest child, we weren't really into homesteading. And so we kind of threw him into homesteading a little bit older. And we've had pushback on that. Like, this is not his thing. Well, not yet. You know, he's of course older and he's taking interest in girls, and all of them are farm girls, and he's going to end up marrying a farm girl and he's going to get thrown into homesteading again. But watching our younger children, so like my almost 4-year-old, he is very eager to do homestead chores because I have always involved him at the counter or out in the garden or whatnot. And so to see these parallels that you've talked about, from starting at a young age going up, or starting almost all over again with an older child. It's very true. And it's so much easier to start younger. So for those of you moms and dads out there who have younger kids, don't be discouraged. It might be a little bit inconvenient. It might take a little bit longer, but it's worth it as they get older and it makes your life easier. I had this conversation with a friend one day. You know, when we put the time in now, when they're younger, it makes our lives easier when they're older because they already know these skills and they already know the systems that we put in place. So
this is very true. I was just thinking as I've been sewing my new apron this week, I was thinking of sitting, my grandma was, she would make quilts and she would do like chain, you know, where she'd sew a whole row of them together. And I would sit behind her sewing machine and the snake of patches would come down the back and I had this little scissor and I would just sit there cutting them apart and putting them on a stack as they fell down. And she would talk to me. A lot of the things that stories she told me probably happened while I was cutting apart her patches. But I was thinking about how nowadays we have to be so intentional about passing on what we want our children to know, because we don't give them enough space to be bored. Because when they are bored, they will come and see what you're doing because they're bored. That's why I set up my grandma's sewing machine. It wasn't because she told me I had to. It was because there was nothing else to do at her house. That was the only place there was action. And I was bored enough to sit there and ask her, can I help you? So if we have to give them space to be bored because they won't join you, you're not more exciting than a screen, you know, and eventually they're going to get into a fight with their brother and not want to play. And they'll end up being in the garden with you or in the barn saying, hey, what are you doing? Mm-hmm. And so that's the, in the preschool and early elementary, that is where the opportunity gets lost if we're not intentional about allowing them to be bored enough to seek out adventure.
Yeah, absolutely. And 100% true. The last podcast episode I recorded was with Joel Salatin, and he touched on that just a little bit about screen time. And so for you, those of you who didn't check out that episode, you should, but also in his new book called Homestead Tsunami, he talks a lot about screen time and he says the exact thing, like when he was bringing up his kids, obviously screen time wasn't as big of a deal because that was forever ago. When you and I were growing up. But now it's like a battle, right? It's a battle between screen time and being bored, and kids aren't allowed to be bored anymore. And there's no creativity anymore. I mean, the most creative things when my oldest son was little, I saw the most creative things come out of him before he ever knew what a screen was. You know, he was in the woods and he was chopping down little junk trees and making forts, and their minds are just amazing. And they're little sponges that just want to soak up everything when they're that age. And so that goes with homesteading too. And they're able to understand way more than we give them credit for when given the opportunity to just be with you and learn.
So the thing that we often forget is, you know, when you bring that newborn baby home from the hospital and you know, it starts mimicking your facial expressions. Like one of the most fun things is for when they're just a couple days old and they start to focus and that you stick your tongue out and then they stick their tongue out. They are programmed, their brain is programmed to mimic everything from their caregivers. And it happens, especially so when they're bonded. So they'll mimic their bonded caregiver. And what we often forget is that doesn't go away. That does not go away. And it even up into the teen years, like when you sit around the dining room table and your teens bring, you know, so this happened at school or, you know, at the youth group, this person said this. The reason they're doing it, and they don't know this, is they want to see your reaction. They want to hear how you respond to what happened because they want to mimic that response. They don't know how they should respond. That's why they're bringing it up at family dinner table. And then they'll watch your face and they'll listen to your words. And in all of that time from that newborn baby to the time they leave your house, and even our adult children will sit here and tell us, hey, what do you think about this? And did you hear about that? And every time that we put a screen in front of them, and I promise I'm not going to get on my my no screen time soapbox. But every time that we put a screen in front of them, we are taking away their opportunity to grow into the kind of adults that we, they're just missing out on how to respond to everyday life because they are programmed. You don't have to teach them to respond, to mimic your actions and responses. They come with a God-given pre-programming to do that.
Mm-hmm. Yep, absolutely. All right. So I'm going to switch gears just a second.
Okay.
Grab a couple more questions before we hop on here. I could keep you for like hours, but I know you have other things to do. So a couple more questions that I know we're going to get. So a lot of homesteading mamas have very small babies. And one of the things that I always say to them is, you know, you have to give yourself some grace when it comes to homesteading, not necessarily homemaking, but specifically homesteading. So, and a lot of these moms, they see women like you or Kate from Venison for Dinner or Three Rivers Homestead. Like we can name so many moms with so many beautiful kids getting stuff done. And so two questions. One, what are some tips for moms that have little ones, like little ones, to get it all done, especially when it comes to, you know, gardening and preserving and the homesteading aspect of it? And then the second question, which I can remind you if you forget, is what kind of planning system are you a planner? How does that work in your household that kind of keeps you on track every day?
Okay, so to the mothers with little ones, I'm going to say you're not going to get it all done. And number two, stop scrolling. I think that, you know how dangerous social media is for preteens and teenagers. And the reason it's very dangerous for them is because they're already trying to figure out who they are and how they fit into the world. So to all the young moms that follow me on Instagram, my heart goes out to you. You should not be scrolling. I want to take it from you the same way I want to take social media from teenagers that I love. It's not good for you because you are, so you want to be a homesteader. You want to do what I'm doing, but you have to first find who you are. You have to mature into your homesteading self. And then you can handle the scrolling. I can handle social media way better than my 13-year-old daughter can because I know who I am. I'm not going to feel inferior by somebody that's milking four cows when I'm only milking two and only able to take care of the milk of two cows because I know who I am. I know this works for me. So don't scroll. Find your people that are going to speak life into you. And stick to those people. The more you scroll, the more you're going to get overwhelmed and you're going to feel insecure, just like a teenager, because you are, in a sense, a teenage homesteader. You're not quite sure how this is all going to work. You don't know if a cow's going to fit into it. You don't know if your garden's big enough. You're not sure about preserving. You are so unsure of everything. What I want to say to you is the only thing that you're really, really sure about is that God has given you those children and they have eternal souls. Everything else fits in around the edges. And I promise you, this season of having little ones, it is short. Don't waste it. It is so short. Garden when you can, but don't think your garden has to be like mine. Like find the people that are going to tell you it's okay. You'll have a big garden sometime, but this year's probably not the year because you have a baby. Just plant a few things. Scrolling to new homesteaders is as detrimental to their self-worth as social media is to teenagers.
Yep. I 100% agree with that. Yes, absolutely. Okay. So the second question was, do you personally have a planner or a system that you write out and use? To me, you seem like you're not really a planner person because I'm not a planner person. And I feel like we have a lot in common on that, but is there anything like that, that you use or that you could suggest that might help other people?
I have tried using planners and they don't work for me. So what I do is I have my phone and the real important things like this podcast. And I even got that wrong last week, Amy. It's I probably need a manager is probably what I need. I don't think I need a planner. I think I need a manager.
But that's fair.
Yeah. So I put things in my phone, but I don't set alerts. It's just, it kind of is in here. But I've finally accepted that I am not a planner type of person, because every January I would be like, this year I'm going to have a planner and it is going to work. You know, by the second week of January, I would wake up and I look at that planner with all its pretty stickers and everything filled in. And I'm like, that thing is bossing me around and I don't feel like doing what I had planned to. I want to do something else. Then I'd feel bad. Then I'd spend all of February being like, oh, why can't you, you know, be scheduled and have a plan. But now I've accepted that I like to fly by the seat of my pants, but I do. This lifestyle is generations deep in me. Like, it's not new to me. So even like, say, the garden and what seeds to plant when, I don't have to write it down because it's part of who I am. And and I've done this, you know, I've done this for 23 years. And before that, I grew up watching my mother do it. So it's not a new lifestyle to me. And I think that's where a lot of people, like, don't you plan anything? Don't you design your garden? Don't you, you know, take inventory of your canned goods? I know by just looking at it, because I've done it for so long, and it's just, it's a lifestyle. And when something is a lifestyle, you don't have to take as many notes or plan as many, you know, you don't have to write it all down, because after so many seasons of doing the same thing, you know, it just becomes who you are.
Yeah, I agree with that. And, you know, it doesn't take very many years homesteading to become that person either. There's a lot of, you know, new homesteaders that might think, oh my goodness, I'm never going to be that way. But, you know, I grew up around farming, and my dad had a garden, my grandparents had a garden, but I was never really one of those kids that was fully involved in those things, nor was I made to be involved in them. So starting our homestead journey, I guess our son was 2, maybe. So it's been over a decade now. But even in just those first 5 years of homesteading, the more I did it consistently, the more I knew. I, like you said, you just knew this is what has to be done. And it's like you said in the beginning too, you have your non-negotiables that have to get done. You have to do dishes every day. You have to milk the cow every day. And then you can kind of fill in around those things. And so just in general, it's not difficult once you've been living this lifestyle, even for just a couple of years, which I think is encouraging too. So I'm not a planner person either. I do the same thing. And you guys, we have a Homesteaders of America planner too. And do you know how many times I've tried to use that? It doesn't work. The girl who creates it, she's an HOA team member, and it works amazing for her. And she has 8 kids, and she is just the most organized person I have ever met. And so the same thing every year, I would be like, this is the year I'm going to use the planner. I'm going to write it all down. And I realized that I'm just not disciplined enough for a planner, because I can look at it and I can see it and I'm going to be like, nope, that's not what I want to do today. I'm going to do something else. Just like you said. But I did share on Instagram, I did find a magnetic, like a weekly breakdown. That is helpful for me. More so it's helpful for our family to kind of see, okay, here's what mom is doing this week. Or here's what we need to do this week. And that's been helpful for, you know, the whole 1 week we've had it. We'll see if that keeps being helpful, but
we have a little chalkboard calendar that hangs beside our fridge. And I never do it. I always there. My husband is much more scheduled than I am. Mm-hmm. I'm just a fly by the seat of my pants. But guys, it doesn't affect. I mean, I get things done. It's right. Not like just because I don't have a planner, I'm not getting things done, because you know me, I get a lot of things done. But when it comes to family events and school events, we put those all on the chalkboard calendar, because I have children that they'll get anxious if they don't know what's going to happen the next day or the next weekend. So we do write those big things down, you know, like, do we have a family picnic, or this is the last day of school, or this is a baby shower. We do write those things on our chalkboard calendar.
Yeah, Awesome. Do you have anything, any tips or any tricks or any just inspiration or encouragement for parents that are bringing up their kids in this homesteading lifestyle, who are wanting to make sure that this all works out smoothly for them?
I do think the biggest thing is know what your end goal is. Know what, make sure that your children, especially if they're old enough to understand, make sure that they know what the end goal of the home, of the homestead is, or even just the long-term goal. And then make sure that everybody that is helping you work, everybody that you're going to, you know, each of your children that you're going to say, okay, today we have to go build this fence. And I would say probably that would be, you know, all the way down to say 6 years old, they understand that building this fence is not just something mom and dad have decided we're going to do today. Building this fence is part of our long-term goal of, you know, having a milk cow or, you know, maybe goats or maybe even, you know, chickens or rabbits, but we're all working together because this is our long-term goal. And if you have teenagers, they're not going to have the same long-term goal. That's okay. They can have a short-term goal of never having an animal never having to have an animal to take care of. Their short-term goal is when we've built this fence, then you can go play basketball with your friends. Right. So they probably need short-term goals, but they know what the long-term goal is. Even if they don't agree with it, it helps them not just feel like you're, you know, yanking them around this way and then that way. They know that you're headed somewhere and that it's going to take a couple years. And then keep your long-term goal, keep that in mind, but don't set a date for it, because if you have a family, not every day is going to look the same. And if you say we want to have the fence built this summer, that's good, but it should be a fluid goal. Mm-hmm. That's what our plan is. And we're going to work towards making it happen. But if it doesn't happen, we'll do it next summer. And we're still going to be okay, because we're still headed towards that goal of whatever your goal is, self-sufficiency or whatever it is. And then be okay with adjusting your goals. Maybe your husband has to get a job and he's not home full time and you can't do it all. So maybe you're going to have to be okay with, instead of getting that milk cow, is finding a source for raw milk where you don't have a daily chore of milking the cow. Like, you just have to communicate your goals and have goals and then be willing to change them, because again, your family comes first. Homesteading is not the end all and be all. It definitely is a beautiful lifestyle, and it's a great lifestyle for raising a family, but it's not the end all and be all. We are raising little eternal souls, and that has to be a priority.
Yep. Amen to that one. Very good. All right, guys, we're going to grab all the links from this episode, including that book that Ruth Ann was talking about, the ebook that she put together. We will try to put all of that in the show notes. So if you want to expand further on this information, there's only so much we can fit into an hour, but she's put a lot of content together for you. So check out all of those show notes below. And then if you have any questions, feel free to send them our way and we'll get them to Ruth Ann. Otherwise, thanks for joining us and happy homesteading. Hey, thanks for taking the time to listen to this week's Homesteaders of America episode. We really enjoyed having you here. We welcome questions, and you can find the transcript and all the show notes below or on our Homesteaders of America blog post that we have up for this podcast episode. Don't forget to join us online with a membership or just to read blog posts and find out more information about our events at homesteadersofamerica.com. We also have a YouTube channel, and follow us on all of our social media accounts to find out more about homesteading during this time in American history. All right, have a great day and happy homesteading.